Today's podcast is dedicated to Workiva's Women in Sales group, sponsored by Heather Maris and Amanda Montoya. At Workiva, the culture really focuses on empowering women and educating them from within, so we are doing a series called Coffee Talks, hosted by yours truly, Tawny Bro. This week, we spoke with Michelle Amato, who is the Vice President of Sales, Global Financial Services at Workiva. Please join us for this super inspiring interview. We hope you enjoy. Thank you, Amanda. So grab your coffee and let's get started. Welcome to Women in Sales. Our mission is to elevate peer women in sales, those that support them through education, mentorship, and best practices in sales and leadership. Well, my name is Tawny Bro, and I'll be your host today. And I'm very excited to introduce Workiva's own Vice President of Sales, Global Financial Services, Michelle Amato. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
Just a little background for those that don't know Michelle. She's worked her way up to the Workiva leadership team, starting as an RSD in 2012. She became the first Rookie of the Year and then continued to lead as top seller for the next 4 years. She was promoted to lead her team as the area director for a strategic central team that supported our Fortune 500 customers before advancing to the VP role of sales earlier this year. And she did have a life before Workiva, but that is her Workiva journey. She was the vice president of product development at Guggenheim Partners, hopefully I'm saying that right, and then 15 years between Morgan Stanley and Bank of America. So that's quite an accomplishment in itself. And we're very excited to hear your story and just learn about, you know, some of the challenges you had along the way and, you know, how your journey really got you here today. So let's get started and jump right in. Thank you again for sharing. So tell us all about your story.
Great. For some of you who heard my personal branding talk last year, some of this may be a bit the same, so I apologize for that. But anyways, it's really exciting to be able to speak to the group for Women in Sales. I remember before we had a Women in Sales organization, it was something I kind of hoped we would have someday. And for those of you who have been here long enough, Russell used to tell me, hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a strategy. So, you know, I was very excited when we got our Women in Sales organization, and even more so to see how it's grown and how women have grown across our sales organization. So when I thought a bit about the journey to today, I'm like, so I was born way back. And then I was like, oh, what everybody's looking for. Yeah. But I did think, you know, I talked to my executive coach a bit about doing the conversation today. You know, she's like, well, sometimes when people ask, well, what is it that gets someone ahead? And you know, I think in part it tends to be resiliency, right? How fast can you bounce back? How fast can you pivot or move to keep your path moving forward? And so when I think about, you know, how I ended up in sales and leading the sales organization, you know, I think back to, you know, when I was a lot younger, actually, when I was a kid, and one of our neighbors, his name was Mr. Gill, and he used to tell my parents, he's like, she's a born salesperson, she's always selling something. And my parents, who neither had attended college, were like, no, she's going to be an attorney, she's going to, you know, be an engineer, she's got these other things. You know sales is almost a bad word, right? So when I was a kid and people talked about it, it was a used car salesman kind of feeling, you want to buy my watch. And so fascinated as I was with the job that I thought he had, in my head, sales wasn't a career path. It wasn't something I was going to be doing. And I think that's important to be transparent, because unfortunately, I think that those stereotypes still exist. And I think they impact women both going into technology and women going into sales. And so I think that's important to acknowledge. And for me, even way back then, and so there's times that I've had felt in my past that I had to justify what I do for a living. And then I got past the justification and pretty darn proud of it. So in fact, if someone comes up to me and says, oh, you know, and I've had these conversations, I'm just going to introduce you as this, because we don't want to say sales, you know, and I'm like, but I'm in sales. And sales is not a dirty word. And so, you know, it kind of takes an evolution, I think. And I think it also starts in how we talk to everybody. And I'll get to that when I talk about one of the books that I recommend that I think makes a difference. But for me, when I went to school and I was the first to go in my family, I had a 4-year scholarship from Wegmans, which was my first job out of school. I actually worked there for 6 years. You'll find I don't bounce around much. I get settled and I like to stay where I am. Not always the best for career growth. Sometimes that you get stuck places, but I tend to be a person who likes to make a home. I went to college and I started in engineering. And I loved my classes. I had taken pre-engineering classes before I went to the University of Dayton. And I was also a college athlete. So I was on the women's lacrosse team and also on the dance team. I went to the University of Dayton, go Flyers. And I started in engineering. And that was the first point in my life where I got to experience being the only woman in the room. And I know for some of you have had that experience multiple times as well. What I didn't realize is that was kind of going to be forecasting for the future. And I sat in the classrooms and I enjoyed it. And when I talked to my advisor at the end of my first year, he was like, "Well, Michelle, you're really good at finance, like in calculus and all this, but I don't think engineering's for you." And I was like, "Well, I'm confused. I'm doing well. I have a scholarship. Why would I not go into engineering?" And he's like, "You're a little too social." And so back then, women still were kind of encouraged to go into other areas versus, you know, if we didn't traditionally fit the, you know, the mold of the other people in the room. And I didn't really fit that mold. And there were some other women who were in my class who did complete it. We were just slightly different in personality and type. And so he walked me over to the School of Business and introduced me to the dean of the business school, Mary Beth DeConnick, and said, "You know, I really think you should talk to Mary Beth because I think this is a better path for you." And I ended up switching my major, and I switched from electrical engineering to finance, which caused my parents to have a heart attack because all they could think of is that means you're going into sales. And so I met with my dean and she was fantastic. And I told her, I was like, "I'm not sure I want to do this. I've never explored business and I have goals. I'm going to go to law school after this. So, you know, I'm not sure this is the right path." And she's like, "Well, you should take some of these classes and get to, you know, get a feeling of it." And in one of the classes we had, I took a marketing class. And don't tell the marketing team that I took any marketing classes because I love to tell them I don't know anything about marketing. But I did take a marketing class. And I enjoyed it. And one of the things I liked was being able to find out how you could, with leveraging a product, be able to solve a solution, right? The way I had always looked at sales was that sales was you're selling something and pushing it down someone's throat. You need to buy a car. You need to do this. Versus the other side, that sales could be a solution. Right? That, you know, when you go to the grocery store, you're buying food to solve the fact you have to feed your family, right? There are different things that you could be doing that actually provide a value in sales. And so I kind of batted some of the stuff around. My dance team needed to fundraise because, you know, most of us were poor working college students. And we ended up getting a paid job for a Dayton Ice Bandits hockey team. It was a AAA or something. I don't know what the actual, but it wasn't the pros. It was a much lower level than that. And somehow when we were there and working at, like, taking the tickets and everything, I worked my way into an internship at the Ice Bandits. And before I knew it, I was out on the ice. I had them directing, you know, limos on the ice, giving away pizzas. I was in the newspaper. How I ended up with this job, because they weren't hiring an intern. But somehow I ended up with a job working there outside of what my team was doing. And the gentleman that was running the program was like, "You really need to look at jobs that allow you to mix these two things together." And I found that hockey was not going to be my passion, although I do like hockey, it smells, but I like to watch it. I don't like to be on the ice. And I did find that it was something that allowed me to keep moving stuff forward. So I went from that to an internship 360 different to Northwestern Mutual Baird Securities. So the dean of schools had gotten me an internship there, which was my entire senior year, where I learned about investment products and the industry. It was an interesting internship. What I found is I had found my passion. I love financial services in that. I hated selling insurance. But you know, sometimes you take a job because it opens a different door. And for me, it did. For those of you who watch The Bachelor, one of the bachelors on it, actually Andrew Firestone, had been an intern at Northwestern Mutual at the same time I was. And I met him because we were both named interns of the Aureus. We all got brought out to Chicago and I got to meet him there. So that was my one fun thing I did at Northwestern Mutual. I got to meet a future bachelor or bachelor guy from The Bachelor. So like, I know him and he's not very nice. But I did get him. I went from that to Prudential when I graduated and moved out to Chicago. I had believed in my head that anything I set forth, I could do. And I was going to be an analyst at a financial services company, preferably in the high net worth area. And I had already had a couple licenses. And so that was what I decided I was going to do. I was going to be a trader, not on the floor because I talk with my hands, as you guys have probably noticed. So this, not so good on the floor. I was allowed on the floor once and I had to walk with my hands like this. So that I did not inadvertently buy or sell. But it was neat to be down on the floor. I quickly found I couldn't find a job. Nobody would hire me. I had licenses, but I didn't have the right connections. I didn't have the networks. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, and I focused a lot on what I didn't have. And I kept going and going and sending out resumes and showing up in career fairs. And I couldn't get a job. I was waitressing and I was renting a room, you know, in Chicago. And that was not my career goal and path. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, this isn't working, but I firmly believe that's a job I want and I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. Find another way to do it. So I convinced one of the traders that I met on taking the train downtown into the city that if I bought him a beer, he could tell me about the other roles that they had in the company. Like, mm-hmm. what else? If I can't get a job here, what else can I do to get my foot in the door? Mm-hmm. And so he mentioned that there was a, you know, they have customer success managers like we have here, the customer service. Mm-hmm. And if you're licensed, you can be a licensed customer service manager. And that would get you exposure to the teams and that. But very rarely do they ever move out of those roles. I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. but I can be with the traders. And they're like, well, yeah, but, you know, most of them don't. I don't care what most do. I get a job that I can go do that. So I went and found a recruiter. And said I wanted to get a job as a, you know, basically a licensed secretary for one of these teams. And I gave him my resume. I was so proud. And she's like, yeah, can you type? I was like, I have a four-year degree and I've licensed mm-hmm. it. But can you type? And I was like, well, I mean, yeah, I can type. She's like, so she made me take a typing test. You should know I did not have the qualifications of typing. but I was like, is this all that is keeping me back? I mean, I spent all this money to get this four-year degree and I can't type, so I can't get this job. And she's like, well, if you learn to type. And I was like, yes, I'm learning to type. So I bought this program called Mavis Beacon. And I sat every night after I finished waitressing typing. I went back a week later and I could type a lot faster. I now can type as fast as I talk. Interesting side note. Nice. But I decided I should learn to type. So I did. And then I went and interviewed. And I ended up getting a job for a small startup called Montgomery Securities. And the general manager for the area actually was Stuart Miller's neighbor, kind of a funny way that things line together. I asked him two questions. I said, can I get the rest of my licensing while I'm here? Will you allow us to get licensed? And number two, can I join the morning meetings at 5 a.m. with all the traders? He's like, if you will show up here at 5 a.m., you can join whatever meeting you want. And I will pay for the first round of testing. If you fail, you pay for the second round yourself. And I was like, deal. I went in, and for this job, I was the fourth person hired for the office. They were still under construction in what was called Sears Tower at the time. And I was sitting there with nothing to do. I had laptops. I had trading systems. We had no customers. And the reps hadn't even been hired yet. But a week later, I had everything kind of set up and the new reps started coming in. And the gentleman who I was going to be working with sat next to me. And he was twice my age, which now doesn't feel old, but back then felt really old. And he sat down next to me and he told me my job was to take notes. And I was like, great, do you have any notes for me to take? Which he did not. So he said, well, your job is also to answer the phone, but it wasn't ringing because we didn't have any customers. So I was like, well, I think my job should include prospecting and taking notes. I'm just saying, you might want to. And he's like, well, no, I dial. I said, so you want me to sit here and watch you dial? Go right ahead. So I sat back and smiled as he went to pick up the phone because our desks were side by side. Like there was no boundary. There was no like separate office space. We were literally side by side. And I turned and just smiled to watch him dial because I had nothing else to do. Phones weren't ringing. We had no customers. There's no paperwork. He made two calls and then finally said, I guess you can dial. I was like, good, because this I know how to do. I'd already sold insurance, right? So what I did was show him how we could prospect, what we could find. And I turned that job into becoming an analyst, then becoming a partner on the team, and finally being our specialist for Morgan Stanley for alternative investments. Because I wasn't willing to take the first no, or the second no, or the third no. And instead of fighting, I was happy to sit back, smile, and watch, and say, if you really want to sit there and do all the work while I watch you, it's not probably going to last long, though. You're going to get one. I would be really mad. But it definitely tucked into what I needed to become in sales. And so for me, I found that you can find paths, and they might not always be the paths people are looking for, but you can get there.
Yeah, I think that's so true too, because I think as we, you know, as we've all gone on our journey, each stepping stone gives you a new skill that you take to the next level, that you take to the next. And your ambition is definitely shining through, like your high energy, the fact that you are so motivated and dedicated at each step. I can tell you're exactly where you're supposed to be. Like you've definitely done the work, learned, have the ambition. And I mean, here's to your future. And I know that you're even, you know, investing in yourself again to go back to school. I think I saw you post something about that. So always investing in yourself, you can never go wrong in, I truly believe. So with all of this energy, it sounds like kind of the first question really to get into is, where did you find your love for the leadership side of this? Because you were told no a lot, you learned a lot, and I feel like you're taking those skills now and sharing them with the right, the younger generation too. Because now I think that the millennial that you were at the time, let's say your age, now you're the one that's able to help and guide. So do you think that was just natural along the way for you?
I think it's usually been a pivot. I like to teach other people how to succeed. So, you know, I think the first time I ever coached, I was 14. I had blown my knee. I was a competitive soccer player before I moved into lacrosse. And I wasn't able to play anymore. I had a 5-year no contact sport restriction for my orthopedic. And, you know, I was like, well, I could sit and cry, or I could find a way to still stay tied to the game that I loved. And so I convinced my mom, because at 14, you can't be responsible for a bunch of other, you know, teenagers, for my mom to be the assistant coach to me coaching, so that I could still be on the field and still giving something back. You know, that I find that if you can help other people take success farther than they expect, or to open doors that they didn't know existed, you know, it's even better than winning on your own.
Yeah. I can imagine you as a 14-year-old. I played soccer. I should have stopped because my knees are terrible now. But you have that drive. So you've always had it, is what I'm hearing with your story. So what keeps you motivated? Like, where do you find your inspiration from? Because even in, you know, these times of COVID and, you know, it's somewhat depressing, right? So how do you keep yourself motivated?
I'm big on setting goals. So, and I set big goals. It used to drive my parents absolutely crazy. But I think if you set them, then you can find ways to get there. It's kind of like driving, right? I will make it to Wisconsin from Illinois if I take 90 long enough, or 94 or something. I'll get there faster if I put in the destination in ways, right? It's going to help me get a more direct path. So I'm a big proponent on setting those goals. And I see that the pivots and stuff is simply challenges you have to deal with. Yeah, I grew up in a household that, you know, I was the oldest of four, and you know, I basically had to start paying my own stuff at 14, which is why I got my first job. You know, it was a really big struggle. And I think that when you deal with struggles, it's how you face them that helps you build into where you want to be. Doesn't mean I never change choices. You know, when after 9/11 happened and the markets went in the toilet and then the dot-com bubble burst and and then in 2008, you know, like, all right, well, I see a bad pattern here. I still love the industry, but this is not something I should still be tied to. You know, you could stay tied to a sinking ship, or you could say, I have skill sets. I'm going to go, you know, ride a surfboard, right? Like, you can, it's how you look at that I think that changes it. So like with COVID, it's been hard not to be able to travel, but I've also received some gifts at it that I can get my workout in every morning without worrying. You know, I have time to do my schoolwork because I'm not sitting in an airport every day. So I try to look more and usually find more of what the positive towards it is than the negative.
I like that. I like set big goals and then find the positive. I know you mentioned before too, you talked with your coach. I think having a mentorship in whatever role you're in and talking about those goals that you have with someone else that holds you a little bit accountable is always, percentage wise, you'll hit your goals like at a higher percentage rate. So do you have, you mentioned you had a book that you really liked. So I would love to hear your book recommendation. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, there was two. The first is one of my favorites. It's more of a kind of a fun read, and it's Fail Until You Don't. And it's by Bobby Bones. So if you've ever heard him, he's a radio talk host, and he's got two books on it. And it resonates a lot with me because that has been a lot of my life and career, is just, I am going to power through no matter what. And the other one really resonates by Daniel Pink, which is To Sell Is Human, because I think it really resonates to what our sales careers are and what services we provide. So those are two that are always on my bookshelf.
Excellent. Thank you for sharing. And we'll have those those titles available for anyone after this, if you guys are interested in that. So with the whole women in business, I always love to hear, like, do you have one beauty tip that you like to share?
Take an hour a day for yourself. If you're a morning person, make it in the morning. If you're a night person, make it at night. I work out every morning religiously from 6 to 7. I get up at 5:30, and that gives me time to, you know, get my eight ounces of water in and get changed and get out to work out. So whatever it is that keeps you centered and grounded, make sure you do it.
You're living the miracle morning. I don't know if you've read that book by L.L. Rod, but he talks about that. Like, take time for yourself every morning, do it earlier, and, you know, it sets you up for a successful day. Because pre-COVID, I was at the studio every morning, getting up at 5. And then once my studio closed, I was doing yoga. And once it closed, I got super depressed. Like, it was just not the same. So it changes your whole outlook for the day when you do get up and take that time to really care and center your head. Do the brain dump the night before, right? Know what your goals are for the next day. I really love that. I know, okay, we have a little time. So I would like to hear if you have any additional just advice for the group listening, just, you know, daily tips for success. It sounds like you're like living every self-improvement book we've read, right? You're doing the morning, you're taking care of yourself, you're investing in yourself, you're continuing in your career. It's a really inspirational story that you're sharing with us. So any last, you know, bit of advice for the ladies?
A big thing is I set an agenda for the next day. It's always on my calendar, and I check it every night before I go to bed. So I know that in the morning I have what I need on my desk. It's prepared to go. So when I'm getting up, there's no surprises, right? Mm-hmm. So that is, I'm a huge fan of knowing what I'm hitting the next day, whether it's my workout calendar on my left or my agenda, you know, that I keep on my phone and my laptop. I think that's important. It's also important to have your goals clearly stated somewhere in your own personal workspace. Like, this is my home office. And I have a whiteboard to my right, and it's got, you know, my FS goals for the org underneath me, and it has my personal goals next to it. And so it's important that you keep that in alignment, and also have a little bit of fun. Mm-hmm. So I have a sign my mom gave me, said she believed she could, so she did, which is usually fairly accurate. And then I am the woman to blame, because normally I am somehow the woman.
That's great. Yeah, I was listening that we really have to bring joy into what we do every day. On my walk, I was kind of listening to this today, that like, make your world your playground. Like, find joy in your on that call, in that meeting. Like, continue to you know, make the world your playground while you're going through, you know, the process that we're doing. We have 3 minutes, so I can open this up to any Q&A if you guys would like to do that. We always encourage this group has, and thank you, your original OG of this group as well. And so we encourage you to try to get involved. If you guys want to join the Women in Sales, you know, join the Slack channel, join the LinkedIn group. We're going to try to do more of these coffee talks and share these stories of success as we continue down this path. So I really appreciate your time today. I love your story. Your energy is contagious. And I think we all that listen to you today will go away and think like, okay, how can I be like more like Michelle today? So I really do enjoy that. And Amanda, I don't know, do you want to open up? We just have a couple minutes, but maybe we can get one question in.
Yeah, I'll open it up if anybody has any questions or anything for Michelle or Tawny.
So Michelle, this is Shay. I have a question. It probably is a loaded question and longer than a 2-minute answer, but you have such a positive story and have been so successful. What would you say has been your biggest failure, and how did you overcome that?
Question.
My biggest failure, when I was new at trading, I was coming back to my desk. I was about 23 and carrying my lunch. And the head trader was upset about a trade that he believed I had made a mistake on, but ended up not being my mistake. But he came at me yelling and screaming, and I had no idea how to process it. You know, everybody's turning and staring. I'm one of 3 women on the entire floor. I dropped my tray and ran. ran crying to the bathroom. I was like, my career is over. I still have no idea what I did wrong. But all I knew is he was on attack, and it was flight or flight, and I ran. I have since learned to hold my own ground and that, but you know, I don't think there's any shame into acknowledging when things have blindsided you. It's then how do you make sure that doesn't happen again?
Thank you, Michelle.
That's a really great way for us to wrap up too. Thank you so much for your time today.